It is evident. Atlanta is a haven for African-American-owned businesses. From small businesses to large construction companies to music and entertainment, Atlanta is acknowledged by many as the Black Mecca.
Welcome to the Empowerment Zone with Ramona Houston, where we zone in on Black and Brown relations and our journey to empowering our communities.
And Atlanta has a long and rich history of Black business success from the late 19th century to the present. Today, I talk to Michael H. Ross, CEO of MHR International and Angel Investor, about the history of African-American business success in Atlanta and how the public and private sectors have created an environment and systems to produce this prosperity. Enjoy our conversation and see the show notes for more information about Michael. As always, make sure you subscribe to the Empowerment Zone podcast and give us a rating on Apple Podcasts. Thank you so much for your support. Mike Ross, welcome to the Empowerment Zone.
Hey, how you doing, Ramona?
I'm doing fine, man. I'm so happy to have you on. You're one of the pillars of Atlanta, and been doing it for some time now. And it's great to have you on to talk about what makes Atlanta so great in terms of empowerment and impact, and what the businessmen and women of Atlanta do to make it so. And so I'm really happy to have you on, and I know you have a lot of Atlanta history and understanding of that history, and just want to talk to you about what makes us so unique in the ATL.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So are you a native of Atlanta?
Well, if you describe native as somebody who was born here, no. But I came here when I was 2 years old.
Okay.
And I've been here mostly ever since. A little bit of time in Virginia and in New Orleans, and a little bit of time in LA, but I've been here most of my life. And so I'm not strictly a native, but I'm about as close as you can be.
I heard that. You're not Grady born, but you're here, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So tell us, you're here to talk to us about Black business in Atlanta. So where you want to start? Because I know it's a lot to talk about when you talk about how Atlanta is just one of the places that people consider the Black Mecca. And just want to get what you think about where did it all start? How did it all start in Atlanta in terms of Black business?
You know, it really goes back a long way, back into, the 1850s with David T. Howard, who's a guy that we have a high school named after, who was a mortuary entrepreneur back in the late 1800s. And it comes up through Alonzo Herndon, who started Atlanta Life around 1905. And then there was a guy by the name of Heman Perry, who had several businesses, including a realty company, a printing company, a pharmacy, a laundry, an engineering and construction firm, laundries. And then he ran into some financial trouble. And then you come into Jesse Blayton and Yates and Milton, who inherited some of the same companies that Heman Perry built, like Yates and Milton Drugstore, and the Jesse Blayton helped to start Citizens Trust. And, you just have a lot of history there. And then you had women like Vernon Jordan's mother, Mary Jordan, and Geneva Hogger Brooks, and Norris Herndon, who took over from his father, Alonzo Herndon. And so, Lottie Watkins, who was a great real estate entrepreneur. And of course, you had the Michael Jordan, of Black business, Herman J. Russell, who built a major construction company, real estate company, and concessions company. You had Juanita Sellers, who ran a funeral home. Jesse Hill, who ran Atlanta Life. And that kind of like is the pre-era. And then I think you have the Maynard Jackson era. And he brought in a whole bunch of other new businesses, made opportunities so much available. And he was also helped by David Franklin. A lot of people talk about Maynard Jackson, but they don't talk about David Franklin. And in my estimation, David Franklin was almost just as important as Maynard Jackson. He was a entertainment lawyer. He was the ex-husband of the former mayor, Shirley Franklin. And at one time he had a client roster that included Roberta Flack, Donny Hathaway, Richard Pryor, Cicely Tyson, Miles Davis, and he executive produced Luther Vandross' first album. So he was a major national figure inside himself. And then, of course, you had Mack Wilburn to come along, who everybody knows. He's the godfather of Black Atlanta business. You have people like Dave Moody, construction guy. And then you got some new people like, Ryan Wilson and Paul Judge and Jew Burke Solomon. And then, you also got to talk about, the music industry. I remember, I'm old enough to remember when the only groups here were Brick, SOS Band, and Cameo.
That's old school. You went back, huh? Back to the 80s, right?
That's before the 80s. That's the 70s.
Girl, part 70s, but they were 80s. They were
80s. 70s and 80s. Mm-hmm. And then Babyface in LA came here, and the music industry took off. And I didn't make no money off of that. And then Tyler Perry and Will Packer came here, and the film industry took off. Mm-hmm. I ain't make no money off that either. So I was trying to figure out what would be the next big thing. And I thought it would be Black tech, that industry would take off. And I started writing some checks to some entrepreneurs, and they've all become big names in the Black tech ecosystem. It's just a thrill to be here in Atlanta. I am in my 30th year of my particular company, MHR International, and we are a program management firm, a management consulting firm, a construction management firm. We also specialize in DBE participation and minority participation. And we've managed the award of over $2 billion to minorities and females over the last 30 years. I've kind of been in both worlds. I've been kind of in the tech world and also in the construction world for a while.
So tell me about your work. What are some of the things, projects that you've been involved in Atlanta, and how has that shaped your perspective about Atlanta business, Black businesses?
Well, the first major project I was involved in, we were the program managers for the 1996 Centennial Olympics. And that was quite a project that cut your teeth on. And we were able to get 37% minority and female participation in about $500 worth of Olympic work, which to my knowledge has never been done before we did it. And I don't think it's been done since. And so after that, we expanded into program and construction management and worked on several projects, including the Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta Airport, the New World of Coke, Atlantic Station, the Fulton County Capital Improvement Program, the Atlanta Public Schools, the Georgia World Congress Center expansion phase 4. So, we've had the opportunity to work on a lot of signature projects in the Atlanta area. And we've been able to do at least 35 or 36% on a $6 billion airport project. And so that's why we know we've been able to impact several firms, minority and female firms over the years in construction.
So why do you think you've been able to accomplish that? You talked about the Olympics. You've been able to pull 35% at the Olympics, but you say you don't think that's been done since then or before then. So what do you think is your magic? Like, why is Atlanta able to do such in terms of contracts?
Well, because I think Maynard Jackson just set the standard. I mean, he was the first mayor to mandate that a certain percentage of contracts were going to go to minorities and females. And it's very well documented that he held up the airport construction for a year and said weeds will grow before we build this airport without minority and female participation. He took a lot of flack from that. The business community didn't like it, but he stood strong on that. And then when Mayor Andrew Young came in, I think they increased it to 35%. So I think there's just an expectation, particularly on any major public sector project, that you're going to get, a significant amount of minority and female participation. And there have been so many firms to grow out of that. So I have to give a lot of that credit to Maynard Jackson and the stance that he took. And, all of the Black mayors that have followed, that have made sure that legacy continues.
Yes, Mayor Maynard Jackson was truly a giant in Atlanta. I was fortunate enough to work for him during his last term as mayor. And, it's very rare that we get leaders who are able to stand in the midst of pressure, if you will, particularly pressure from the business community. And for him to stand to say, no, this airport will not go on without a certain percentage going to Black-owned business, which really changed the game, actually, not just in Atlanta, but around the nation. Like you stated, there are so many mayors that are now following his lead. And he is really, truly missed in terms of leadership in Atlanta.
Yeah, and not just nationally. I mean, I was the only United States consultant to the South African Procurement Task Force, which was set up by President Nelson Mandela. And we brought a number of South African officials over here. And I went back and forth to South Africa in the 90s. And we developed an affirmative specifications program for a project over there that became the precursor for the Black Economic Empowerment Program that I think was put in place under President Mbeki. So the Atlanta Way, the Atlanta program, the Atlanta passion for Black business has gone not only all over the country, but it's gone across the water. And I was just happy to be a part of that.
Wow, I didn't know that piece of history. That's very powerful to see the impact that Maynard not only has locally and nationally, but what impact he has made internationally in terms of the economic progress and development of African Americans and African American business owners and those on the continent, Africans.
Yes, a lot of people don't really know that.
So what do you see as the trajectory for Black businesses now? What do we need to begin focusing on in terms of, widening our impact and empowerment in terms of the growth of the Black business community?
Well, I think it started out with in the government sector, but I think it's gone well beyond that now. you know, like I was saying earlier, in entertainment, in film, and tech, we have thriving Black businesses that are just doing major things in the private sector. And that's, you know, that was always a hard thing to crack early on. But I'm so excited about, you know, what's going on. And, you know, I still think, you know, maybe I'm a little biased that, you know, if you want to grow a Black business, I think Atlanta is the place to come. And I've lived in some other cities. I've visited a lot of other cities. I was in and out of St. Louis for 12 years doing work up there. But I haven't seen a more favorable climate. There are incubators here. There are accelerators here. There are venture capitalists here that are all creating an environment of Black entrepreneurship. And I don't think it's any secret now that the reason why Google and Amazon and Microsoft and Facebook are all coming down here, because there's such a wealth of Black talent, primarily because of the Atlanta University Center and the constant influx of Black talent that comes in every year here. And in addition to that, several of the other institutions now, Georgia State, Georgia Tech in terms of engineering, Emory, Agnes Scott, there's a wealth of Black talent coming in every year. And I don't think that's duplicated anywhere else, frankly, in the world.
Well, while you're naming colleges, let's go on and name the colleges of the Atlanta University Center.
Of course, Morehouse, my college, my alma mater, Spelman College, Morris Brown College is coming back strong. I like what the president is doing there, and Clark Atlanta University as well.
My college. Got a connection.
Yeah, I know. Well, you might not know that, but my parents taught at Atlanta University.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, my dad taught anthropology and sociology for over 25 years there. And my mother taught in the School of Social Work. So, you know, I kind of grew up a campus brat. But, you know, I love the Atlanta University Center. It's produced or enhanced so many people like W.B. Du Bois. My father was a student of him, not directly, but he was very much influenced by him. Of course, Martin Luther King Jr. And Spike Lee and Sam Jackson. Kenya Barris from Blackish came out of Clark, Atlanta. And Pinky Cole of the Slutty Vegan. So much talent has come out of the AU Center. And even Lisa Cook, I went to a reception for her, the newly confirmed Federal Reserve, first Black woman ever, graduate of Spelman. You know, I just beam with pleasure when I talk about, you know, all of the products of the colleges of the Atlanta University Center.
And we also have Morehouse School of Medicine and the Interdenominational Theological Center are also members of the Atlanta University Center, which is the largest consortium of historically Black colleges and universities in the nation and in the world. So we do have a wealth of talent in the Atlanta University Center, as well as those other institutions that you named earlier.
Sure.
So looking at Black businesses and moving toward not only just making money, but making impact, what is your take on are Black businesses embracing social responsibility and really making impact in the African-American community, as well as the wider community, nation, and world? What are Black businesses doing to make a social impact?
Well, we can start right here with the family of Herman Russell, who donated the former headquarters of the H.J. Russell Company to develop, to produce and develop the Russell Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship. And, you know, that's going to have a major impact on Black entrepreneurship in this city. A number of Black entrepreneurs that I know, Dave Moody, Mac Wilburn, even myself, we've consistently given back to the community. I was president of the Atlanta Black United Fund for 13 years, which was a consortium of over 40 Black social agencies that we were funding through payroll deductions. So I think we have an obligation as Black entrepreneurs because we've been blessed. You know, we didn't just, we just didn't make it on our own. We made it because somebody paved the way for us. And so it's incumbent upon us to do the same for other people. And that's one of the reasons why I got into angel investing, because I needed to pay back, you know, some of the opportunities, or pay forward some of the opportunities that I was able to get and take advantage of as a Black entrepreneur. And so I just think that there are a lot of instances and examples of where Black entrepreneurs have given back to the community. Now, does that mean that we've solved all the ills of the community? No. Does it mean that we don't need to do any more? No. We have to do more. It's an incumbent upon us, particularly in this city, because a lot of people talk about a lot of the positive stuff that happens here, but we also have high poverty rates for Black children. And some studies have said over the past 5 or 10 years that in terms of economic stratification, this is one of the hardest cities for a poor child to get out of and to come up the ladder. So we still have a lot more work to do through school systems, through programs, through after-school programs, you know, to make sure that the least of these, you know, God's children are still given the opportunity. Because the one thing that we know is that if we are given an opportunity, we will excel.
That's it.
And we've shown that time and time again. And all we need a lot of times is just a little help in order to put us in a position to prosper in the way that we can.
When you talk about it's the responsibility of Black business owners to contribute to the community, do you, and you named many of those who already do that, who are longtime business owners. My question to you is, do you feel like there's that same level of consciousness and that same level of responsibility in the new business owners, the younger business owners who are coming up? Do you think that they are socially responsible business owners, or do you think that they are following into that tradition of Black business owners who not only make money but make impact?
You know, I really do. I think they are. When I look at a lot of the young entrepreneurs, I hear a lot of, you know, a lot of the terminology that we used to talk about during the 60s in terms of Black empowerment. And you look at the Gathering Spot, for instance, it, you know, here's, I mean, it's such a great story. You know, here's two guys, Ryan Wilson and TK, who came up with an idea that a lot of people didn't believe in, that you could actually build a business off of a Black private club. Now, one of the most remarkable things about that to me is they made one of the best historical pivots that I've ever seen, in that the name of the company was The Gathering Spot. And COVID came and you couldn't gather, but they were able to pivot in a way that they went to a more digital platform and they became even bigger and better than they were before. And so I see people like Ryan Wilson and TK and Jewel Burke Solomon, you know, as people who are very much focused on business. Barry Givens is another one, Justin Dawkins, Rodney Sampson is another one. They're focused on business, but they're also focused on, you know, giving back, you know, to the Black community. And, you know, it really it makes me feel good. So I definitely think that there is a focus on giving back to the Black community, definitely.
So in your assessment of Black businesses and your life here in Atlanta, do you feel that Atlanta is indeed Black Mecca? That's always been a question. Are we or are we not?
In my estimation, we are. I don't know. I mean, you know, as I think of some cities, Washington, you know, is strong because it has the federal government there. So that's unique. Detroit was always strong in the private sector. But I think when you add public sector and private sector and all of the industries, I don't have the stats on this, but I would venture to say that there are thousands of firms here that make over $1 million in revenue per year. And I don't know if you can find that anywhere else because we're so diversified. And you can be, you know, in the music industry or attached to the music industry. You can be in the film industry or attached into that. Or you can be in the food industry in some form or fashion. We're very diversified. You can come here. I think you can realize your dreams. I just don't know of any other city where you can do that. And I think that's the reason why we attract so many entrepreneurs who actually start off in one city, but then see that there are more support systems here. There's better opportunities to grow and scale here. And they decide to move their businesses here instead of stay where they originally started them.
So do you have any suggestions or advice or anything you see in terms of growing even more and expanding even more Black businesses in Atlanta, and what other work Black businesses need to do to make an even greater impact?
You know, I'm very big on incubators and accelerators. You know, when I talk to young companies coming up, you know, that's one of the first questions that I ask them. You know, have you gone through some kind of acceleration program? Have you gone through some kind of incubation program? Because, you know, there are support systems. The Russell Center is one. Networking at the Gathering Spot is another. And now Greenwood, who's acquired it. There are other places like ATDC, there's the Atlanta Tech Village. I'm just a big proponent that, you know, you can learn about how to run a business, how to run the operations of a business, what kind of legal documents you need, what kind of accounting services that you need. It's tough starting a business on your own. And I think if you can attach yourself to one of these centers, I think it will help you develop at a faster rate and a more substantive rate in terms of developing your business.
So Mike, now we've reached our college strategies portion of our interview, where I always ask my guests what strategy they would give students to make sure that they are successful in college. So what school or schools did you attend? What were your major or majors and your degrees? And what piece of advice would you give students to ensure that they're successful in college?
I went to Morehouse. I got a bachelor's in political science, and then I went to the University of Virginia Law School, where I got a JD degree. You know, I really like what Pinky Cole did yesterday and the Clark Atlanta University graduation speech that she gave. She and another bank here said that they were going to allow every student to create an LLC. And, you know, I just think personally that people need to have a corporate alter ego. And so, you know, that's what she's providing that opportunity for. So even if you're in school and you may want to be a lawyer, you may want to be a doctor, you may want to be whatever you want to be, but I think you need to also be thinking about, you know, owning your own business in the future. And I think getting a head start on that in college, like I've seen so many people do more recently than before in the past, I think that will give you a, you know, I think it gives you an advantage in life. And so I just love what she did, and I hope other people will follow suit.
Well, I got a follow-up question for that. You know, you talk about having this corporate alter ego. Why do you think it's so important for students to have a business, even if they're employed by somebody else? Why do you think it's important for them to be business owners?
I think it's just good training. I think it's, you know, you gain wherewithal. There are a lot of laws in this country that favor corporations. You know, you may have a hobby, you may have a passion that, you know, you may not be willing right now to take a chance on, you know, making it a business for your life. But that doesn't mean that you can't start, that you can't do some things, that you can't learn business principles at an early age. And so I just think it's important to have, you know, a business. And I say that going into business, you follow your passion, because if you're passionate about something, you're gonna do it all of the time or as much as you can. And if you do it all of the time, you're going to become an expert. And if you become an expert, you're going to be able to charge people for your advice and your services. And so I'm very passionate about promoting entrepreneurship and as early a start on it as possible as you can get. I think it's important.
Great advice.
A special thank you to the incredible team of the Empowerment Zone. Terry Ungully, theme song, NADWORKS, digital support, and of course, our featured guest.
If you enjoyed my podcast, please subscribe. We are on all of your favorite podcast platforms. Be sure to rate us on Apple Podcasts too. Thank you for your continued support.